Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Hey, and welcome to the Short Stuff. I'm Josh. There's Chuck. There's Jerry. Just as it should be. Short Stuff. Let's go.
Do you remember the Pledge of Allegiance by heart?
I do. I was at a city council meeting the other day, and I said it. Yeah. I was like, oh, I'm a little rusty. It's been a while.
I know. I did the same thing. I went to say it in my head, and I was like, I think I'm getting some of these words wrong. But this is about the Pledge of Allegiance. I think we should, I'll just read it real quick so everyone knows what we're talking about. This is what we do in our country, everybody. Every morning when we wake up.
When you wake up, the loudspeaker in everyone's house commands you to rise and say the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under who? Under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, everybody.
That was the most bizarre rendition of the Pledge of Allegiance I've ever heard in my life.
That's right. And as it turns out, as we will see, the Pledge of Allegiance was a marketing tool.
It was. It really was. It was an add-on for sales for a little magazine called The Youth Companion, which just is not a good name for a magazine. But
it sounds that I know it's not, but that sounds so Nazi.
It does. It sounds blandly menacing somehow.
Right.
But it was edited by a guy who was the opposite of blandly menacing, a guy named Francis Bellamy. He was an assistant editor at the time. And his last name might sound familiar. His cousin, Edward Bellamy, wrote a very famous utopian novel called Looking Backward. And Looking Backward was basically about how, you know, by the year 2000, inequality will have been done away with and people won't work, will retire at 45 and have a life of leisure. And things are just going to be a lot better than they are now. And one of the ways that they were going to get better, according to Edward Bellamy and his cousin Francis, who's the main character in this story, is through Christian socialist values. And so Francis Bellamy was a Christian socialist.
What's that, Josh?
It's a socialist who's a Christian.
That's right. It was a group of people who said, you know what? We can get a equitable society. We can go further as a people through Christian values. And being Christ-like, who we can all agree was probably a socialist.
Oh, most decidedly. Everybody knows that.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time, this is the 1890s when our story really is set, there was a huge influx of immigrants in the United States. And it's very much like it is today. There was a lot of division over, you know, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Are they going to take over, you know, our jobs? Are they going to drive wages down? It was a time of great change for the United States. There was a huge amount of inequality, just like there is today. It's I don't want to say a mirror image of our time, but there were a lot of similarities. And so Francis Bellamy was like, I believe that having immigrants is a good thing, but I also believe that they should become members of America. They should become Americanized. And one of the ways that one of the ways he thought that would be a good way to carry that out is to basically inculcate their children in school, in public schools.
Yeah, start them early. It's an old trick, oldest trick in the book.
Yeah, it really is. This is not like radical, innovative thinking.
No, get it going with the kids and you got them. This was a big deal, though, because pre-Civil War, there wasn't some big, huge public school system. It was post-Civil War, 1870s and 80s, when you really started getting the ramp up in public schools and the idea that, hey, we've got all these kids trapped all day long.
Yeah. We can do whatever we want.
We can do whatever we want, and we can make them good citizens as well as educating them. And we can do it all.
Hey, I read this article years back. I don't remember when. But it basically said that the public school system, I guess starting about this time, was training kids for the sole purpose of going to work in factories.
Oh, really?
Like mindless, busy work, sitting still and quiet for 8 hours
a day. So that's how it took its shape?
That was ultimately what they were teaching kids to do. And I was like, wow, that was an eye-opening thing to read.
Wow.
So sorry to blow your mind like that, Chuck. But around about this time, the Columbian Exposition was about to happen. And we know that by its other name, the World's Fair of Chicago in 1893.
That's right. It marked the 400th anniversary of Columbus's first New World journey. And so the Youth Companion, the magazine that we've mentioned, and Bellamy, they said, hey, we can really get involved in this thing, and we can really ramp up the patriotism if we team up with some civic groups, and we can sell a lot of American flags. We can get a lot of new subscribers to our magazine.
We can make some serious coin.
Yeah, make some big money, basically. And so we're going to print a patriotic program right. for these schools all over the country that kids can recite on this date, on October 21st, 1892, which was the big celebration day nationally for the Columbian celebration. And they said, Bellamy, you go write this thing. Go put something together.
Yeah, and he did. He came up with plays, patriotic songs, ways to honor. I don't know what the word I'm looking for is.
I don't know.
I guess profiles of Civil War heroes.
Okay.
Just typical patriotic American stuff. But one of the things, just one of these things that were part of this big whole program and wasn't meant to be some standout thing like it became, was a Pledge of Allegiance. And it was kind of like the one that we have today, but a stripped down version. And we will really get into it right after this message. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on!
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
All right, so it's 1892.
Right.
Got this big celebration going on, honoring the great, great Christopher Columbus, who did everything the right way.
Exactly. Love that guy. Everyone does.
And there was already a Pledge of Allegiance in 1885, we should mention, which came about for the very first Flag Day celebration.
Yeah.
Poor George T. Balch, or Balch. It's probably
he
Balch.
He was marked from birth.
What, with that name?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was never going to work out for him. No. So he actually wrote the first Pledge of Allegiance. And in some schools, they were doing this, and it said, "I give my heart and my hand to my country, one language, one flag." Not bad.
That whole thing almost reads like a yawn.
Yeah.
So
it didn't stick.
No, it didn't. And Bellamy could have just republished this, but he's like, I can do better.
He said he called it childish.
Yeah, he did. So he wrote his own pledge, a new pledge of allegiance. And it said, "I pledge allegiance to my flag and the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all." And
Not
so bad. In 1892, all of the schools that got this program recited this, I guess all at once. It was kind of like the predecessor to Hands Across America or something like that. And Bellamy said he was pretty proud of it, but apparently he was going to add liberty, equality, fraternity at the end, like the French slogan, the French Republic slogan. But he's like, ah, it's too fanciful. So
too
he
French.
Just left it as is.
That's right.
And he also, Chuck, recommended a way to salute the flag during the Pledge of Allegiance, too, didn't he?
He sure did. I mean, there's no other way to describe the Bellamy salute other than a Nazi salute.
An upside-down Nazi salute.
Yeah, but this was way, way, way before that came about. So
right.
Obviously there was no Nazi salute. There were no Nazis.
No, but apparently that's – so rather than, you know, just imagine the Nazi salute, but rather than your palm down, your palm is up. Kind of like almost like you're like a backup dancer, like
– Yeah, right.
Like giving it to the lead dancer at the front.
But then you got to do both hands and start them at your waist and bring them up.
Right.
As you sing.
Have you ever seen that Dream Hands video?
No.
I'll send it to you.
Okay.
You're going to love it. It's like an instructional dance video for, you know, upward bound kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just send it to you.
All right.
But anyway, so it wasn't until 1943 that we ditched the reverse upside down Nazi salute to the flag. Until 1943.
Well, post-war.
People were doing that.
Actually, not post-war.
Peri-war.
Yeah. I think 1923, though, was when they had the first revision to the lyric, but I guess you could sing it.
Sure.
At the National Flag Conference, delegates there said that my flag, they said, you know, that's a little vague, and we don't want anyone thinking that immigrants are talking about their home country's flag.
Right.
So,
like,
they changed it. So they changed it to the flag of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think about a year after that, tagged on of America, just
right.
So everyone knew what was going on.
Yeah. And so everybody went bonkers for this. Like,
big hit.
Pretty much out of the gate, schools started reciting it. Like we said, they were reciting the other pledge before. Now they picked up this new one. And in 1898, New York became the first state to make reciting the pledge in schools compulsory,
mm-hmm.
which is a whole different jam than everyone just saying the pledge is part of this, you know, this
national
ode
pride
to Christopher Columbus.
Thing, sure.
Right? And so very quickly after that, especially around World War One, at the beginning of the U.S.'s involvement, more and more states started requiring compulsory pledges in schools, too.
That's right. And, you know, it's no coincidence that those aligned with moments of political and certainly warlike upheaval in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then
yeah,
we got to mention in Under God, because I think you notice it never said that up until this point in the podcast, except at the beginning when I read it.
Right.
That didn't come about until 1954.
Isn't that crazy?
I know. Eisenhower said, you know, he's the Knights of Columbus said, you know what, Dwight, maybe you should throw Under God in there. And he did. And they said, I think the quote was, they felt that schools in the United States were under threat of infiltration by godless communists.
That's right.
So let's just throw that in there.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they're going to further change it to highly divisible instead of indivisible.
so divisible.
Yes.
There have been a couple of Supreme Court cases about it too, Chuck.
Sure.
When states passed it as compulsory, now it's compulsory typically for teachers to lead the pledge, but not for students. That's not how it always was. Until 1943, students were compelled to say the pledge as well. But then in 1943, in the case West Virginia Board of Education versus Barnett, which involved some Jehovah's Witness children who were like, I'm not supposed to be doing this. It's a religious thing. Students were finally, the Supreme Court said, no, you can't force anyone to say the pledge.
That's right.
So that's it for the Pledge of Allegiance, huh?
Yeah, good stuff. Thanks to Dave Ruse, our old pal there. And that's going to be, this is hot off the presses. This is going to be on the How Stuff Works website.
Yeah, so go check it out at How Stuff Works. And in the meantime, Short Stuff is out.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.